And now it's time to say good morning to Peter Allam from Allam's Attorneys. We are talking legal matters today, and today our topic for discussion is minors and the law applicable. Peter, very good morning. Welcome on this chilly Monday morning.
Yeah, it's very chilly, only 10 degrees out there. A little bit cold on the coast, uh-huh. But expected. It's going to decrease. Some very interesting news reports this morning that you've just, or headlines, shall I say, that you've read out. Number of them involving minors as well. I think today, yes, indeed, going to be children. And basically the criminal justice system, or let's divide it up into three. We're going to talk about, at what stage children and young people can make decisions and act on their own without the assistance of their parents. We're going to chat a little bit about what are the age thresholds for children to access social grants or housing subsidies and the like. And then, more importantly, at what age can children be prosecuted for a crime or be detained in a prison? Because, you know, children acting against the law is on the rise and very, very scary. I mean, I looked in the Daily Dispatch this morning and the Society for the Liquor Board at a conference on Saturday morning, and they talk about children at the age of 13. Almost, I think the majority of children at that age have tested, tried, and drinking alcohol, absolutely shocking. It's sad. It shows an impact on the parents. It shows what's happening, or it shows that children are out on their own and there's no control over them when you read of things like that. So let's first of all start by saying that the Child Justice Act creates a unique and separate criminal justice system for children. It places emphasis on restorative justice, as well as on the rehabilitation and reintegration of children. So it doesn't automatically jail children or take them away or put them into homes and that type of thing. It has age limits, and let's start by maybe doing a start by saying that the age of the majority in South Africa is 18 years old. So a child becomes a major at 18 years. Before you turn 18, you're considered to be a child. Mm-hmm. But there are certain acts that a child under the age of 18 can do itself. So this may be base our thing. What can a child do once they reach certain ages? So let's start by saying that, you know, minors, a baby, a minor is there, and a minor has no rights at all. Uh-huh. Cannot act on his own and needs the guidance of the parents. The parents become the guardians of the baby, and, you know, they claim any parental responsibilities. But, of course, the High Court can always intervene. You need to be careful. So if you're a parent that has a baby out of wedlock, or if you're a parent that has a baby where there's a problem because you're involved in drugs and criminal activities and things like that, the High Court has the right to grant full guardianship to someone else. In other words, they have the right to take the child away. They can do as is necessary with the child. Age group that you really find, what can I do once they're 14? There, all of a sudden, the child can become a witness to a will, can consent to his or her own medical treatment, believe it or not.
Okay.
Can consent to donating blood. And is considered to have criminal capacity and can be tried and prosecuted from age 14 onwards. Mm. So, you know, they don't get away with it. Obviously, the justice system is such that they will look for rehabilitation and guide the child and that type of thing. So it's quite important. So if we have a look at it, I mean, you know, at 16 years of age, let's deal with that first and just say that a child can open a bank account and be liable for all the obligations and conditions that the adult has, can make a valid will at 16, terribly so, and quite frightening, is that they can buy and sell cigarettes and any other tobacco products, which is, you know, they can drive a motorcycle, they can get a license for a motorcycle. They can register as a voter at 16, but only vote when they're 18. They can be served papers by the court. Sadly as well, they can consent to sex. So, you know, having sex with a minor under 16 is an automatic jail sentence. But once a child becomes 16 years of age, they can consent. No assistance from the parent is necessary. They can agree to donate their body parts, organs, and that after death.
Mm-hmm.
The males can consent to being circumcised. The females can consent to virginity testing. They can also apply for child support, a grant, for themselves and for any minor siblings that they may have,
mm-hmm.
Where it's considered to be necessary. They can be considered the head of a household, believe it or not, at 16, and bear rights and responsibilities as a caregiver. And frightening enough, they can work. They can go out and they can work. They can work in a mine as a training program, but not employed at an underground mine until they're 18 years of age. So, you know, that's what you've got there. So a child basically doesn't have to be 16 to be employed, because the law says that you can be employed at 15 years of age. So, you know, in the old days, I remember it was very popular in the supermarkets for children to be employed as packers. There was one problem when liquor became saleable in supermarkets. They could then not touch or pack alcohol. That's still the law there. But they can be employed. They can choose to leave school. And believe it or not, they can, you know, consent to entering into a marriage. They can get married at 15, but they obviously need the consent of their parents if they're going to do something like that. So, you know, the law and minors is very extensive, and each one has its own little position in the setup. You know, the age of majority, though, as we mentioned earlier, is 18 years. So that's when you get full legal capacity, and that's what is probably of the most important part. So if we go back and we summarize what we've discussed today, let's go to criminal capacity, because naughty kids is something that, or out-of-hand kids, kids committing crimes, is just so much on the rise. So when it comes to criminal capacity, a child under 10 years are not held criminally liable. They cannot be. Children aged between 10 to 14 are presumed to lack criminal capacity, but they can be, but you know, that can be changed. The law can charge them, can be rebutted by the state if they feel that the circumstances are there necessary. So age 14 and above is when they presume to have criminal capacity, can be arrested and detained. However, there are certain rules and regulations regarding any child that is 14 or under that is detained by the South African Police Services. The guardian needs to be present and things like that, called immediately. They cannot put them into a cell with other criminals and things like that. So the, you know, the police need to be careful and cautious in that regard. But I mean, they're well trained in that regard, and I don't think it will happen. Of course, somebody asked me once before that their child was picked up on the side of the road and put into the back of the van with a whole lot of elderly people that had been collected by the police as well. Was that legal, or do we have a damages claim? Look, it's a case of where it should be avoided, but if there's no space anywhere else to place the child or deliver them back to the police station, you know, it's not going to give you a damages claim. I mean, that parent that asked me that years ago was more interested in suing the police for a damages claim than correcting the naughtiness.
Correcting while the child was in the police van in the first place.
I mean, you know, the child was detained for a reason. The parents were reprimanded in that particular matter, but more important to them was, oh, we've got a claim. Our friends are all telling us. We, you know, wasn't in the days of Google, thank God. Because I don't know what that would have told them.
It probably would have had them suing the police till the end of day.
Yeah, or otherwise you would pick up probably American law, and then they'd say you have a right to sue, because you can sue for next to anything there. So that's where the criminal capacity comes in. Contractual capacity, the parents do need to sign with children, similar to everything else, 16 and under, 14 and under, parents must sign. They cannot enter into a contract. You know, the only ones employed by perhaps under 15, they can enter into, but they are prohibited without the parents' assistance. In other words, the parents must sign. So it's only at age 16 that they can enter into certain contracts and that type of thing. Medical treatment, yeah, medical treatment. They can consent to medical treatment at the age of 14. And in South Africa, HIV testing, they can consent to it at the age of 12. But they need to be examined by a doctor who must make it clear that they have the capacity to understand the implications of being tested for HIV. You know, so the rights that minors have, they have a right to education, to health care, protection from harm, and that type of thing. So, you know, they also have special protections in the form of parent responsibilities. So, you know, there is a responsibility on the parent and the guardians, if you're a guardian, to look after the children, look after the property of the children. You know, where a child has inherited or child has been given something by an uncle or aunt or by somebody, you know, they need to pick up as the parent and look after those goods and look after them. So there are a whole lot of acts that cover children. You get the Child Justice Act, like we said. You know, that's the first one over there, the Child Justice Act. It's a unique and separate criminal justice system for children. It's more about rehabilitation and reintegration into the big world for children that have committed crimes and that type of thing. So that's one act that is applicable. The Children's Act also, it's a framework for the protection and care of children in various aspects of their lives. So that one governs them, who they should reside with, what they're entitled to, and all the rest of it. But, of course, the upper guardian of all children is the High Court. That is the supreme guardian of children, and their best interests are considered. So that, for example, is why when you see a divorce happening, the High Court, the judge, will want a report from the family advocate on the condition of the children, where they need to reside, a thorough investigation of the children is necessary. No divorce can take place without that these days. So even if the children consent and say, oh, well, I'm going off with Dad, not going to work, not going to happen, there must be a proper interview from the family advocate, a proper report from the family advocate, and the High Court, as the upper guardian of all children, will make the final decision in that regard. So if, for example, you've got a conflict with the family advocate and you believe that they haven't done what's in the best interest of the children, you can bring that to the attention of the court, and the judge has a right as the upper guardian to amend that if necessary. But I can tell you now that it doesn't happen easily, and there have to be very, very good reasons for something like that. Minors also have a right to be heard on matters that affect them. You know, their age, emotional intelligence, capacity, what decisions they're capable of making will all be taken into account. So, you know, child consent in South Africa is very much there. It's based on age, and it's a number of different places where such decisions can be taken into account and sorted. You can go into the... you know, there's a guideline for what a child at a certain age can do. In fact, it's extensive. You know, there are various laws that give answers to questions and that type of thing. So you get a situation where they talk about children making their own will, children proceeding with legal litigation, service on people, on children, or legal action to be taken against them, domicilium, leaving home, taken into account, employment, very important, employment comes into the picture as well. And of course, you know, alcohol and gambling and tobacco, firearms, driving a car, those type of things also play a very important role, you know, with children, and there are age limits for that. For example, you know, working, we've already covered where they can start at 15. They can basically only then really become employed at age 18. You know, the different places that they can go work at, if you want to join the police, if you want to join the fire brigade, they're different ages. There are all sorts of things. Alcohol, South Africa, 18 years of age. Mm. Gambling, 18 years of age. Selling or supplying tobacco, unfortunately it says 16, but it should indeed be 18. You know, that's where you are there. And then, of course, working in the liquor industry, like I said, mm-hmm. you know, under 18, you know, not allowed to produce or import liquor or supply liquor and that type of thing. They must be 18 years of age in terms of the Liquor Act. So, it, as I mentioned, there are plenty laws in that regard. Mm-hmm. Smoking is ridiculous because children can be allowed to smoke from 12 years of age if they have their parents' consent in terms of the Tobacco Act. And then, of course, a firearm is very strict. Child under 21 cannot apply for a firearm. And, of course, the motor vehicle, we know. You can apply for your driver's license learner, one, at 16, but only get your driver's license at age 18. Mm. A motorcycle is 16. That's up to, I think, just a 125cc vehicle, motorbike that you can drive, and that type of thing. Voting, you register at 16 onto the roll, but can only vote at age 18. So it's very, very strict in that regard. Your ID book, very important to know that when your child turns 16, you can apply for an ID book. Prior to that, they don't have an ID book. They have the little children's child ID book, which is in the care of the parent. But at age 16, they can apply for an ID document, a passport as well. People traveling, children traveling overseas, they need the assistance of the parent. Minors traveling, you know, parents must produce an unabridged birth certificate reflecting the child's particulars of the parents of the child. And, of course, if you're a single mother or a single father taking the child out of the country, you cannot do so without the consent of the other party. It's very strict in that regard. And your unabridged birth certificate means it must have full details of the mother and the father. So you need to get a copy of that if you're going to travel. You know, some countries don't issue unabridged birth certificates. And then, you know, the parents need a competent certificate from the foreign country stating what their requirements are. And then, of course, you know, that document has to go with you when you travel. So you've got to be very careful. If you're going to take children out of the country to another land somewhere else, make sure that you've got the document with you. You know, it does say that the document can be emailed and accepted, but make sure that you find that out beforehand. Don't mm-hmm. get to the airport and discover that they want your original or something and you're in trouble.
Yeah.
You know, if you're going to travel with somebody that's underage and not your biological child, you know, there as well, you need proper permission from everybody. You need an affidavit from the parents saying that the child is going with you. For example, the child might be going on a primary school tour to London to play cricket or to go and watch a game of rugby or something like that. Mm. The legal requirements there and the director general will issue a certificate in that regard. The school will obviously prepare all the necessary documents and that type of thing. So you've got to be careful. As I say, it's very, very strict. Travel with a child is very, very strict if you're going out of the country. And don't find yourself at the airport stranded because you've got a group of 10 children and you haven't made sure that all 10 have proper passports, proper letters of authority, proper traveling rights in the school group and that type of thing. You know, that you've got to have documentation. You've got to have the birth certificate. And it must indeed be the original, believe it or not. It must go with you in a number of countries. Also, invariably, when you're traveling like that, they would want a copy of the parent's passport certified to go with mm-hmm. and that type of thing. So, you know, proof of consent is very, very important. Not only if you're taking a group of children away as a teacher or something, but also if you're the parent, you need to make sure that you have that. Mm-hmm. And then, of course, a very necessary ingredient as well is that if you're traveling with children and you've got a passport for them, make sure that it has an expired. because if it's expired, you've got no chance of saying, oh, well, I can't leave my little child behind. Please just let me take the child with me. They will turn you back. You will lose the money that you paid on air flights and things like that. You need to make sure that you are properly in possession of what is necessary for the different countries around the world. All the countries seem to have their own laws and regulations in that regard, and you really need to make sure that you have checked it out and sorted it. So that's basically where we are with children and the rights of children, Wayne. Today, you know, there are, you know, drug testing that can be done at schools as well. Another thing that school searches are allowed to do, you know, your child's rights during search, seizure and drug tests at the school. They may carry them out. They have a right to do that. They have a right to look for dangerous weapons. And the child himself, though, has the right to know what his rights are in that regard. You know, they can only be conducted in the best interest of and safety of all learners, and there must be a reason for it. You know, they can't be unfairly targeted. So, you know, there must be let's say that we're going to test for drugs or alcohol or something like that, there must be a reasonable and proportional reason to do so. You can't just come along today, get into assembly and say, okay, the prefects are now going to walk around and they're going to test everybody for drugs and that type of thing.
Right, right.
And of course, you know, like everything, the same gender person must do searches. So you can't have a male searching a female, for example. It must be male on male, female on female. And also very important with children is that if you're going to do an inspection at school for drugs or alcohol or something like that, it must be done in a private place. So you can't say at assembly, okay, walk down the line and see any tapping. I remember when I was at school, the prefects used to come along and look for stuff on us and walk down the queue and pat your jacket and your pants and everything. So that basically is not really allowed. You know, it must be done privately, and there must also be an adult witness if you're going to send the prefect down the road to search people or take them into the office to be searched. There must be an adult, that is someone over 18 years of age, with them. And then, of course, you know, you can, believe it or not, force children into a drug test at school. It isn't allowed, but, of course, it must be a urine or non-invasive test, and it must be administered correctly. The child must be told of it. The parents must be advised of what's going to happen, and that type of thing. You know, it's very important that is covered and not left. I mean, in this day and age, it's sickening that children take guns to school and weapons and knives to school and that type of thing. It's, you know, what's kept in there is very, very sad. Yeah, that's basically, you know, to say that it's very important that children are well protected. And looked after.
And just on that note, Peter, you know, We just a couple of days past, I think it's the second anniversary of the Enyobeni Tavern tragedy.
Yeah.
And, you know, with all due respect to the authorities, not much has changed over the last 2 years because the same problems still seem to be cropping up. Maybe there's more awareness of, for instance, as you mentioned earlier, alcohol abuse, etc., etc. But at the end of the day, it's unfortunately still happening, and a lot more still needs to be done. While we've got all the laws in place, which are, as you've described them, I mean, it's textbook laws, but the implementation and the enforcement, I think, is still seriously lacking from both, like, parents and society.
Yeah, it's actually quite sickening. You know, that you had this situation where things like that are happening. And as I mentioned in today's Daily Dispatch, the meeting that was held on Saturday morning was just about the abuse of alcohol. And I mean, you know, I was quite sickened when I saw that it's age 13 that they start with that. I mean, it's also, the other day I was also told that sex amongst children starts at age 13, which is rather shocking, you know. It shouldn't be, but that's the world we're living in today.
Right, right.
you know, another aspect that we didn't maybe cover there is, can children, minors inherit immovable property in South Africa? Yes, they can. You know, you can leave stuff to your grandchildren that are underage, but what will mostly happen over there, several legal protections and procedures are put into place.
Mm-hmm.
The Administration of Estates Act covers it, and the Wills Act, and the law of intestate succession can occur. And the child will definitely be able to have the property registered in its name, but obviously cannot act or do anything with it. And until such time as he reaches an age, you know, and it depends, the value of it is then taken into account.
Right.
Property is administered either by the surviving or the parent, if he's inherited in terms of a will, or the parent's killed in a car accident, you know, they will have a suitable person. The guardian will exist that the master will appoint. If there's nobody to appoint, then, of course, a curator needs to be appointed to look after the inheritance until such time as a child does become of age.
Right.
And that's 18 years of age in something like that. You know, a lot of people burden their children and say you can't inherit till you're 25 or 30, put stuff into a trust, which is sometimes really a nuisance and not really necessary.
Probably more costlier than it's worth. Well, Peter, sadly, we've run out of time. A very, very interesting topic, and I'm sure one that we can continue chatting about in future chats. But if somebody wants to reach you, maybe they've got a situation involving minors, how can they get in touch with Alums?
Okay, they'll find us at 6 Sansom Road in Berea. Telephone 043-721-018. Easier, though, is just to go onto Facebook, look up Alums, add a S to our surname, A-L-L-A-M for Mary, S for Sugar. They'll find all our details there. They'll find the chats there. And we do try to get the chat through by the end of the week after we've received it from yourself. And, of course, they can go onto your Facebook as well, and they'll find it there as well. Contact details for us. Great phone call away.
Great. Peter, thank you very much. Have a good week. Stay warm, and we'll chat again next week, Monday.
Thank you, Wayne.
Thanks, Peter. Cheerio then. That's Peter Alum.